Hey you, yeah you, come join our Discord. The Mixing Music Discord server is filled with tons of awesome information and people. People that can help you out and information that can help you grow your business and to help you improve your mixes. So come join us and find the invitation link at mixingmusicpodcast.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
One, two, three.
Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, forever, my lovely Fancy Lou. Did we do Fancy Lou already?
We did already do
Dang,
Fancy Lou.
Frivolous Lou. What am I doing with the F?
I don't know. That's not an L, but
Lucky Lou.
Lucky Lady Lou?
Lady Luck
Lou?
Lady Luck Lou.
I mean, I'll take it. At least I'm lucky.
Legu.
Okay, there we go. I'm sending that one to my best friend. He's going to die laughing.
There you go.
Legu.
Legu. And today we have a very fun episode. We wanted to talk a little bit about dynamics. Someone in my DMs on Instagram hit me up and he said, let's talk about dynamics. So shout out to you. Thank you so much for recommending this topic. But we're not going to be talking just about compression. We're not going to be talking about one single topic. We're going to talk about dynamics in general. So
okay.
Let's first talk about genres of music. For example, classical music versus a taiga song.
Yeah.
Where does dynamics kind of play as far as genre goes?
Man, genre has a big, big role in dynamics. Like, if you really think about it, classical music, it's all about doing as little as possible. Like, even EQ is almost a mortal sin on that one. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, what the hell did you do to my cello? It does not have a resonance at 400 hertz. But if you start compressing too much, you actually start killing the liveliness, the naturalness of the instrument. And unfortunately, classical music just does not have a tolerance for that. But if you're talking about taiga, compress the living shit out of that snare. I don't want to hear any dynamics.
There you go. There
like
you
dynamics
go.
Is a mortal sin at that point.
There you go. And I think that this is important to bring up because people always talk about in the mastering phase, dynamics and headroom in like LUFS, right? LUFS.
Yep.
Loudness
unit. It's basically loudness unit full scale.
It's the average. Basically, it's the volume of the peaks and the valleys. Like, so you're transient.
Exactly.
So it's not measuring the loudness per se.
It's integrated, basically.
Yeah, but it's measuring the dynamics of the song, which is super important because it does translate into perceived loudness and how much it's limited and compressed. But I want to talk about how people are always like, get it to like minus 14, minus 12. And some people are like, I get mine to minus 5 and like brag about and whatever. It doesn't matter. The point is, if you're getting a very sparse acoustic guitar track to minus 9 LUFS.
That's way too fucking
it's
loud.
It's way too loud. And if you're getting a Taiga song to minus 14 LUFS,
that's way
it's way
quiet.
Too quiet.
Yeah. Now, one can argue, yes, the streaming mediums and all that, but somebody actually told me something recently which made me laugh because it's kind of true. You know how it's already, and this is not to go to a side topic at all, but you know how it's already hard enough for people to get credited on their work? What makes you think that they're going to want to upload the minus 9 version later? When streaming services now say, oh, well, we don't have a minus 14 standard now because the standards have always changed. So you got Apple that's a minus 13.1, I think it is. And then you got minus 14. You got Tidal that's another medium. But then now streaming services are just saying, well, fuck it, give us anything and we'll set it to the level. But some services are now starting to say it's lossless volume changes. Ah. Some of them do degradation. So I know a few mastering engineers that, though they provide it, they know that they're just going to the client's going to upload the loudest one anyways.
Yeah. And I think that's actually a really important thing I've never really thought about, which is we have people putting, I mean, Apple has a different loudness scale than Spotify, and they penalize for loudness for different parameters and for different, you know, things. So actually thinking about the future, when you stream your song directly off your band website,
mm-hmm.
or if you buy the song, mm-hmm. or if it's on the CD.
Are you buying that format?
Yeah, I mean, that format, like the CD version, whatever.
It's going to be much louder and cleaner.
Yeah, because there's no like degradation of audio. There's no like built-in compression of the file, whatever. I actually never thought about...
Nobody ever talks about it.
Yeah, like not doing it for any one specific one, but just future-proofing it in general.
Like I only know a handful of mastering engineers that actually hand over multiple types of bounces. Like I do 3 different bounces. I do CD bounce, Spotify bounce, and Apple bounce because one... Mastered for iTunes is an actual certified thing to do. But then again, every time they ask me, like, which one should I upload? It only gives me the option of uploading one song.
So, but for the problem with that is that, for example, with DistroKid, CD Baby, I don't think does it. TuneCore doesn't do it the last time I checked either. Is when you upload it, like, as an independent artist,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't ask you if you have an Apple master or if you have a Tidal studio master.
No, you have to deal with them directly for that.
Yeah, so... At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter for independent artists.
Yeah, that's why I always ask them, what is the medium in which you're actually distributing the music? Oh, my label's doing it. Okay, if it's the label, I'm going to give you every type that I know is going to be needed. And then if it's just independent, if they tell me CD Baby, I'm like, well, CD Baby's going to give you the option of one.
There you go.
So either you release it quieter on some domains and louder on others, or you have a loud option, period.
Yeah, and... I want to kind of go into the next part of this dynamics conversation, which is gain staging. And I think we're going to do a whole nother episode about this, but just briefly, I'm going to say a statement. I want you to either agree with me or disagree and why.
I'm neutral.
There you go. I think the point of gain staging is to either not distort anything or to distort anything on purpose. Like if you I've never really thought about gain staging before. Usually my thought is, am I clipping? No. And then I don't think about gain staging ever again.
Mm-hmm.
The only other time is like when I'm using a saturator, or I'm using a compressor outboard or plugin, I'm pushing it really hard. So sometimes I look at the VU out, right?
Yeah,
most of the time
slamming.
I don't even do that most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, so I would say, is gain staging a topic? I think people overthink it sometimes.
I think it's a very simple topic that anybody that goes to school or doesn't go to school, whether it's YouTube Academy or SAE, doesn't matter. No shout out to SAE. But realistically speaking, gain staging is a very simple thing to talk about because it just breaks down to, are you getting a proper amount of level? And I know a lot of recording engineers that came from large format consoles to tape, you recorded it as it was supposed to sound. Like you should be able to line up all your playback faders to zero and it sound exactly the way it should sound. So, are you supposed to get a certain amount of gain at that point? No, you get enough gain to actually get the level desired and to get the tone desired. If you want to push it harder, what you would do is on the actual recording fader, you would turn the direct output down while hitting the gain harder. You would still maintain a proper level to where you're trying to balance it. But if you were trying to be clean, like we talked about, taiga versus classical, well, if you're in classical, it's all about pristine sound. How accurate is it? And then gain staging is really a topic at
that
point.
There you go. And so maybe the thing that people are getting confused on, which maybe we just gloss over because we've been doing this long enough that we kind of forget the super basics. Yeah. But maybe the big part of gain staging is the difference between input and output, as well as the difference between gain and volume.
Yeah. Actually, everybody does get confused over that. And to be honest, I've seen many mistakes like that. Yeah.
I mean, like, that could be, like, its whole other episode. But I wanted to talk about gain staging. In general, I think people overthink it, but there is definitely a difference between input and output, mm-hmm. and you can clip it on the input or on the output or on neither, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And also, what did I say? Not just the gain and the volume. There's a difference between gain and volume. So let's go into the next little thing. I want to briefly talk about this. This is another thing that we could talk about. And we might do a whole nother episode specifically on bus compression.
Yep.
But let's talk about bus compression and limiting. Like, what's the point of bus compression in both the master bus, so the entire song, as well as like specific groups? Like, what's the point of that kind of bus compression?
Well, I always look at it as two things. Either I'm trying to get more punch or attack from something, or I'm trying to glue it together, which means kind of rounding out some of that punch and attacks. You can do that. You can glue vocal buses together. You can do more punch and attack on like percussion buses. You can try to glue the mix together or make it hit harder. But it all goes down to like where you're setting your threshold, your attack, your release. Please, everybody, learn how to use your makeup gain. If I'm bypassing your plugin and it suddenly drops in volume dramatically, you did not gain stage right.
There you go. And I think that this is a whole nother topic. We could do a whole nother episode again, but I always say the same thing about compression. I say that the basic concept of compression, especially on the master bus compression, is the point is kind of to not hear it to a certain degree, right? So that being said, people use it a lot for like a color box to kind of color the sound and change the tone a little bit, which I do that a lot too.
Yeah.
But in general, right? Nobody should listen to a record and be like, it's hyper-compressed, unless that was the intended purpose. But I will say, let's talk really briefly about slow, very mute type, slow compression on the master bus versus like quick SSL, like VCA type compression, SSL G bus, things like that. In general, I would say the very slow reverb that has very slow and attack time and release time. At first, I wondered if it was actually doing anything because if there's no release, then there was no point like to doing any sort of makeup gain. Like if it's, for example, if the gain reduction reads -2 the entire song and doesn't ever bounce even a little bit, then it's probably not doing anything because you're just making the entire song -2 dB or -2 gain reduction, right? Reducing it. So, but I do want to say that slow compression like that is meant for overall songs when the chorus is loud and the verses are quiet. It's kind of meant for this overarching loud parts and quiet parts, where faster compression like VCA is meant for the peaks and hitting those transients.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you feel and use that for?
Yeah. I actually prefer to use variable mews. You'll see me use like the Manly Vari Mew, or you know me. I love my double wides from Retro Instruments.
There you go.
Absolutely love them. I'll use those on vocals all day long because I'm really just trying to be soft and gentle with it. I'm not trying to kill a massive amount of dynamics. And even when they compress hard, they can be very transparent.
Yeah. And actually specifically, that's a good topic, is good thing to say, is on vocals specifically, the first compression that I do is a slower compressor. Right now I've been playing with like the new German compressor on Plugin Alliance, which kind of adds this nice tone to it. I'm kind of using it for EQ. But
it's like
it's
the
very
brother
slow
to the V76, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. It's very slow. It's very beautiful. And then I usually end my vocal chain with a very aggressive 1176 or something very quick like
it. Like a 2500?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Where usually the 1176. But I don't ever do more than 1 or 2 dBs on either of the compression.
Let me ask you this. Multiband, at any point in between?
Any point. Multiband I use mostly for like peaks. So, but that being said, kind of Pro Q3 has the dynamic option, and I use the Pro Q3 very aggressively, like with the dynamic section. But let's go into the last thing, which is limiters.
Okay.
And what are limiters? What are they supposed to do? How are people using them? How should they be used? Just briefly.
Well, a lot of people tend to use a limiter as like, just make the bounce loud. That's the one thing I always hear people, hey man, you're going to throw an L2 on that, right? It's like, well, yeah, I mean, at the end, it's like, oh, why not just throw it while we're recording just to make it loud? It's like, well, no.
Turn the music up. Like the speakers up.
If you want the music and your vocals louder, I could just turn your headphone amp louder. I mean, we got really nice headphone amps here. But realistically, a lot of people are using limiters on their master buses, but people forget you can use them in the mix too.
I use it quite often.
Yeah, I actually like using the Oxford limiter for my master bus. I like using Pro L2 from FabFilter on like the drum bus or something. If I'm doing some like really punchy drums, but I'm really trying to round out those transients, because people forget that those transients, if they get out of control in the mix, then you're going to have a hard time gluing the mix together in the master bus.
Yeah.
But I know not a lot of engineers like to say, oh, put limiters in your buses, but let's be honest, if it's used right, then it's not an issue. But a lot of people tend to overuse them. What's your thoughts on that?
No, yeah, I do think that on the master bus, on the mix bus, people tend to overuse it. If you're hitting your limiter more than minus 2 dBs on the master bus when you're trying to make it loud, it's probably a little bit too much. Not only can we hear it, and specifically with the Waves limiters, they can distort.
They do distort.
They definitely do distort, especially the L1. Yep. So I will say go easy on it. And if you want to go louder, instead of doing minus 6 dBs on the limiter, go put on 3 limiters in a row in series of minus 2. Like, that's going to sound better than one that does minus 6. I do think that it's super important to also say that I do think that a limiter in general is underutilized in a mix. I think that people will have amazing compression, but compression sometimes isn't fast enough. Some of those transients will sometimes go through. And if you use them, it's mostly meant for the mastering engineer, because they'll have a lot more headroom and it'll sound louder. At the same time, can be overused.
Yeah.
But I think that limiters in general is a great tool to have during the mixing phase on individual tracks as well.
I actually tell people a lot of times that my favorite tracks to master are tracks where I'm not trying to keep the transients under control, if they're not wildly out there. Reason being is this: if you're trying to get your mix louder, here's the secret. Stop making everything quiet and loud. Like, actually try to add some saturation, try to add some elements if you need to, that fill up space in between, because the more that's actually like glued together, the more that it actually sounds closer together and maintains transients, the easier it is to actually get a loud mix without having to slam a limiter. And that's where DK was mentioning, having to hit your limiter with more than 1 to 2 decibels, your mix is probably a little too dynamic at that point. Maybe add some backing vocals to thicken it up. Maybe add some doubles. Maybe add a doubler with a phaser behind it to, you know, add some kind of sonic element in the background that really thickens up the mix. But you'll notice that if you look at your master bus, even a light amount of compression can help you glue it all together to where you don't have to hit the limiter as hard. If the limiter is the only type of dynamic processor you have on your master bus, I suggest you consider starting looking into compressors. And once again, we brought this up just moments ago, bus compressors and SSL, if you're trying to glue or add some attack, a variable mu, if you're trying to round it out like classical music. If you're doing music like the people that we're going to be interviewing for a next episode, Sago, they've got really good mixes on their music. They actually sound great. They're punchy. They're loud. But if you listen to it, everything's blended so well, but it's not like they're trying to slam an 808 in your face. In fact, there's not a lot going on below 50 hertz is what I've noticed.
Yeah,
and but because of that, their aggression. Music sounds loud.
Yeah, very aggressive, and I love that. And so on that note, I think honestly the final thoughts on this is with dynamics, remember, the dynamics is based on the song.
Yeah.
Based on the genre, the culture of the genre. When in doubt, listen to similar music.
Yeah,
it doesn't even have to sound the
it.
Same. And to any artist that's listening right now, I will say that especially at the beginning stages, if you aren't willing to admit that you're influenced by other people, nobody is ever you don't like, I don't sound like anybody else. I'm this new thing. No, you sound like other people. Everyone it is. If you didn't sound like other people, you'd be what's called outsider music, which is a whole nother topic that I really love. Weird ass music. That's genuinely not really influenced by anybody. Right. So, I do think that it's okay to admit you sound like other people for the point of referencing. Mm-hmm. Who do you want to sound like? What tonal, like, what do you want to chase after? What are you going for overall? Like, for example, in TV and film, like color grading, they'll use like blues to show coolness and darkness. Like, that's kind of what like the mix is. Like, if you have a mid forward mix, it's going to give it like an old school loud vibe, where like a mid dip mix is going to make it sound very modern and pop.
Yeah.
Like, and there's pop musicians that have that mid forward sound and pop musicians that don't mix that pop mid forward sound. And so it's really up to you as the artist and up to your influences, up to the engineer a little bit, but like, you're the, as an artist, you're the last one that makes that decision. So don't do too much. Don't worry about it too much. And if you send it to a pro, hopefully you'll never have to worry about it again.
And just talk, communicate that with your engineers, whether it be mastering or mixing. Like, I love when a client tells me like, hey, I'm really trying to get the perfect master. Do you mind revisions? And I usually say, hey, why don't we just jump on a live stream together?
Yeah.
Like, why don't we do this together? Like, well, it'll be almost like we're in the same room. We can choose the different colors, the different sounds, punchiness, not punchy, whatever it is. But instead of having to go back and forth a million times, find an engineer that works well with your sound. Finding your own engineer makes a world of a difference in the creative process.
I do think that that matters. And just as fair warning, if you are an artist and you are not an engineer, even if you have a little bit of engineering experience, I think it will be best for you to let me suggest that if the engineer says something about dynamics and loudness, they might know a little bit more about it than you do. Maybe they don't, but I would suggest that sometimes they do and they know what they're doing. And usually an engineer, if they have something to say, maybe something like that, where it's like, hey, this is too loud, too quiet, whatever it is. But, you know, whatever it is, this happens all the time, even with mixing. They say they want more bass. What I do is I turn down the bass, but I just distort it more, so the upper harmonics come through a little bit more, better through the phone, better through the speakers. And I actually lowered the bass. And every time I do that, they said, perfect. That's exactly what I wanted. I'm like, I did not do what you asked me, but I interpreted what you meant.
Yeah.
So like,
getting to know your clients, getting to know your engineers and all that, having them get to know you makes your life so much easier.
There you go. There you go. So on that note, please, like, continue to mess around with dynamics, continue to research, continue to find out, continue to reference your mixes, continue to reference your productions, and kind of compare side by side and how you can match different sonic textures and dynamics to other things, as well as kind of make it your own, when to make it your own. So on that note, thank you so much for listening. Please join our Discord group. We do have an exclusive Discord group. We're trying to grow that right now. Follow us on Instagram. We have a podcast page as well as our personal pages, again, in the description of this episode, as well as the description of the show. And we invite everyone to give us a 5-star review if you're listening on Apple Music. That helps us out a lot. I know it just takes a few moments, but we're really, really grateful for everybody that has. And before we close out, let's celebrate. This is it. By the time this show releases, we have over 100,000 downloads for this show. Thank you for everybody that's listening. Over 100,000 downloads. That's it. We are in the top 1% of all podcasts, and the top, we are in the top 50 in music in the world, and in top 10 in various different countries around the world. We're really grateful for all our listeners. We're trying to get the hang of this. Things are growing very slowly, but they for sure are growing. So we're thankful for everybody that's listening and supporting us. And we hope that we can help you chase your dreams. So on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
1, 2, 3.
If you'd like to take advantage of my free guides and online videos, please check out links.dkmixes.com. That's links.dekeimixes.com. Are you trying to find the perfect distribution platform to get your music on Spotify and Apple? I personally use and love DistroKid. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/DistroKid to get a small discount and get access to a platform with unlimited uploads for a yearly fee. Happy uploading and enjoy the show.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.